Honourable members, let me welcome you to our last session of getting briefing on strategic and operational plans from the department together with its entities. We've gone the whole route, and we have the National Nuclear Reactor as well as the National Nuclear Regulator. No, blame it on X. Regulator as well as the National the Nuclear Energy Corporation to present their strategic plan. And also at the end, I would like us to just look at the revised report on the small bill. There was just a retagging, a technical retagging process, which was done by the joint tagging mechanism. I'll explain it when we reach that at the end. Given that we're running behind a few minutes without wasting any time, having welcomed everyone, shall I allow the committee secretary to read us apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies. Honourable Maloto is attending a workshop. Honourable Selau, who is attending the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry meeting. And then Honourable Khadere, who is attending the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Trade.
Which Honourable Khadere?
Oh, yeah. Okay, my apologies. So he's here then. So those are the apologies here. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. We will still, I just hope things will improve in the next parliament. The pressure of us being drawn into other committees unavoidable in any case. Thanks very much for that. Shall I hand over to the National Nuclear Regulator to do the presentation? Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and the chair. I will do the presentation for the strategy of the National Nuclear Regulator, but of course the strategy is accompanied by the annual plan.
Unfortunately, we don't know your team.
I was going there.
All new faces except you.
I think I should start there. I'm not alone, however, I am with the Deputy Chairperson of the Board of the National Nuclear Regulator, Mr. Thabo Mofokeng, and also we are accompanied by Mrs. Nsiti Kote, who is responsible for the compilation of the strategy and making sure that the annual plan that goes with it are aligned. So that is the team that we are having. Our Chairperson couldn't make it today, and therefore, on her behalf, the Deputy Chair will be doing the honours.
Perhaps without wasting time, let me just go into details. We managed to sort of summarise that into two key areas. One will be the high-level strategic plan, but of course we indicated how we are going to go about that by having the annual plan that indicates the target. One of the issues that we were accused in the past, not accused actually was mentioned, but our measures were not smart. This time I think they are smarter, and therefore we make sure that that alignment as required by the Treasury Act is complied to. In the part A of our strategic overview, we've got our mission and vision statement. We are looking for the National Nuclear Regulator to be an independent, world-class regulator of authority of nuclear safety. Of course, nuclear security is part of it. But our main aim is to make sure that we provide and maintain an effective and efficient national nuclear regulatory framework for the protection of persons, which means the public and workers, and the property as well as the environment against any effect of nuclear damage. We've got values. As an employer of choice, we are striving to make sure that we lead the values. One of our values, we want to be very professional. We hold ourselves accountable to the highest standards of professionalism. We encourage our members to belong to various professional organizations so that they can be bound by the code of conduct of those professional organizations. Excellence is what we strive for. We don't want to accept mediocrity. We're doing our work with integrity and ethical, as ethical as possible. We value our people. We recently branded Team Orange as part of the Team AG because we want to operate as a team and along the openness and transparency. Section 5 of our Act provides us with the legislative mandate of what actually we must do, and all our strategies will be sort of underpinned by these six key issues. Key among them is to provide for the protection of person, property and environment against nuclear damage through the establishment of safety standards and cultural practices. I'll talk to that later, what we've been doing in that space. Exercise nuclear control, basically the safety over the whole nuclear cycle, starting from siting, designing, construction, operation, manufacturing components, which will become critical as we move to the nuclear expansion, and the decontamination and decommissioning, including the closure of nuclear installation. One of the issues that we need to do is to regulate, to exercise regulatory control over all actions, be your mining, mineral processing facilities, your nuclear power plants, your NEXA, and your radioactive repository, through the granting of nuclear authorizations. And we follow that with the system compliance assurance, inspections, and audits that we're doing through all these facilities. This is done also looking at the national obligations as aligned to the international and legal instruments. Concerning nuclear safety, we are signatory to various of them, the Convention for Nuclear Safety and the Joint Conventions. And among others, we have to ensure that we provide for the nuclear emergency planning and response processes. We make sure that all facilities that should have those measures, your NEXA and your nuclear power plants, have got an emergency, integrated emergency plan in place. Key functions, we can't amend nuclear authorizations. There's no facility to operate without us having issues with that. We deploy our assets appropriately. We collaborate with other institutions for the collection and scientific information, our universities and research institutions. We ensure ourselves against any liability. Of course, what is important is that we advise the minister on key issues. One, on the condition that may cause nuclear damage in terms of what the minister has referred to us, but also proactively what we think. It's necessary for us to advise the minister on any issues related to nuclear regulations. We act as national and competent authority in connection with international atomic energy regulations. I will talk to that later, how we occupy that space. But of importance is that when you look at the government priorities, there are quite a few areas that we need to talk to as a national regulator. One is the industrial plan, policy action path, the new growth path, and of course, most important thing on performance and evaluation. We need to make sure that in all those areas we are aligned with what the government prescribes, and make sure that we comply with the framework associated with those plans. That, among others, which becomes key of all the four issues, is promoting social compact between the authorization holders and the communities in which they live. I think that becomes key. And I will explain that as I move on. What progress are we having to make sure that that becomes a reality? Performance and evaluation framework and approach, I've indicated briefly that in the past, our strategy and our APP, there was some elements that were raised that were not smart. I've indicated that we have moved beyond that to be a little bit smarter. And in all that, we make sure that we contribute to the five strategic outcomes as indicated. But of importance is to make sure that the NNR adheres to NGP through advanced transformation agenda. By capacitating and employing young nuclear scientists and engineers, especially from Cuba cities and advantage groups, we have partnered with South African young nuclear professionals to make sure that in their awareness drive on demystifying nuclear, they are part and parcel of the process. One of the ways NNR is making investment in communication technology through the upgrade of our emergency control center, so that as we move on, looking at the lessons learned from Fukushima, key issue that we identified there was the emergency preparedness and response. Department of Energy has given us some money to make sure that we upgrade our emergency control center to be in line with best practice. issues related to the IPAP is not directly related to us, but we will participate in that space as an implementing agency. Of importance is that we need to make sure that promotion of more labor is open industrialization plan. We have looked at all those kind of issues in our space, and we will ensure that anything related to that, we will highlight and make sure that we comply with the relevant provisions. But what becomes important is that because of our mandate, the NNR contribution to the industrial policies is ensuring a safety and responsible implementation of the action plan. Particularly, as I indicated, in the areas that relate to operations that potentially pose nuclear and radioactive waste hazards. That means we are going to make sure that in all the areas where nuclear was sort of a scarecrow, we're going to move into this space to demystify it, to make sure that nuclear safety culture is well understood, and most importantly, it's part of the culture of the related entities. Zooming back to our mandate, we have classified our strategic outcomes in 7 areas that covers and give us the most the outcome of oriented goals. 1, which becomes very critical, effective regulatory oversight and framework to assure safety and security. We are going to move to strengthen stakeholder relations and enhance our corporate image. We move to ensure that we create a high-performance culture within the organization. I'll talk to that later on to indicate how we've done that. And of importance, we've had the financial model that indicates that we are going to ensure that we are financially viable and sustainable, develop and maintain a sound organizational infrastructure, including upgrading our site office in Cape Town to make sure that it caters for the nuclear expansion program. And of course, we cannot escape to be good citizens in terms of enhancing good governance and ensuring that we're valuing our people through effective human capital management systems. What does that mean? It means we have, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, we have clustered that into 4 areas: government stakeholder perspective, finance perspective, and international processes, and lastly, learning and growth perspective. The first one to do with customer is where I think 55% of our strategy lies. We need to make sure that we've got an effective regulatory framework, stakeholder relations, and all the other elements that goes with that are mainly ensuring that we've got an effective legislative and regulatory framework. In terms of the finances, we must make sure that we are financially viable and sustainable going into the future. Good governance, high-performance culture, and sound organizational infrastructure. Of course, couples with, to be an employer of choice, ensure that we've got productive employees. Our structure is quite flatter and leaner after the restructuring process that we have undertaken. It's made sure that our structure is close to the operations that we regulate. As you can see, it's very, very flat. We've got, at the moment, interim CEO, and we've got 4 senior managers and people supporting the executive committee. So as you can see, it's a departure from the old that was a little bit heavier. Currently, this one is more flatter and leaner. Quite a few areas that we've been focusing intensively on because we've been able to sift the challenges that we've been having on the issue of risk management. We've looked at how we've been managing risk to the level that at the moment we are at level 3 as per the treasury regulations. Improvement is observed in that kind of area, but of importance is that at one point we were looking at how our regulator is going to be financed and so we can be sustainable going into the future. Among other things, because of the competing priorities, our state grant was a little diminishing. Some authorization holders, because of the different economic environment that we were in, they were surrendering their licenses, and that complicated the whole equation of how we were operating. We came up with a financial model aimed at counteracting those risks, and we think the model, as we placed it before the executive authority, to further peruse out and approve. If it's approved in that nature, it might assist in alleviating all the risks that we have identified. As we're moving forward in the nuclear expansion program, among other things, there are other key projects that the NNR will be focusing on. I'm just highlighting the key areas without going into the real details. One of them is that Eskom is in the process of replacing 16 generators. 3 in each unit. That will be coupled with a thermal power upgrade to about 10%. That will need resources from both regulator and ESCOM. But key to us is that we need to be able to provide regulatory framework on how that will be done. We are already engaging with ESCOM on how to do that, and this will be key for the next 3 years for the NNR to make sure that we are not the weakest link in that particular process. The new expansion program, we need to start early engagement, primarily because we are now part of the NEC squared, and therefore we need to make sure that all the regulatory issues that need to be factored in taken care of are really taken care of, so that going forward the new expansion becomes a very smooth process.
I think it just be careful, we're not all scientists and engineers. Some of us last did this in matrix. So when you say NEC squared, we think of Albert Einstein.
The NEC squared is a very long name. It's double N, double E, and double C. And therefore, it has been coined the acronym of NEC squared as Nuclear, National Nuclear Executive Energy Coordinating Committee.
Under the Deputy President of the country, then we remember. Okay. Once we say it's a nuclear drive under the offices of the Deputy President of the country, we all understand.
Thanks, Chair, for bringing context to that, because I might be caught to be too scientific. And one of the issues, and after that comment from the Chair, I think it becomes important that I indicate that we used to have an emergency response center at the NR. But when we looked at it versus what has been happening, especially with regard to the Fukushima Daiichi accident that happened in Japan, we realized one of the issues that was mentioned and highlighted was that we need to have a properly resourced emergency center so that in case anything happens, God forbid, we must be prepared. Therefore, in response to that, we were allocated a $12 million, which we appreciate from the Department of Energy, to upgrade that emergency control center. In process of upgrading it, we looked at the international space, the best practice, the IEA, and finally came with what we think would be suitable to South African conditions. We are also looking at refurbishing our laboratory so that we can have independent analysis and verification capacity. We allocate $24 million for the project. The project will be completed in this financial year, April 2014. End of the financial year, it will be completed. A lot of work has happened. We will remember that the money for that was allocated some 3 years ago, overtaken by issues, and finally, the project is well on track and it will be completed as required. The last bullet that talks about the continuous implementation of the self-assessment, the NNR has looked at itself in view of where it's coming from, where it's going, look at the international space, and we have found it necessary to review our regulations and ourselves looking at the IAEA self-assessment tool. It's a tool that is used by all other regulators belonging to the IAEA to introspectively and selfishly looking at themselves on how they responded to the challenges as happening in the world. We looked at it, and among other issues, key is that we are able to revise and review our National Nuclear Regulatory Act. Following that, we have developed a lot of regulations that are going to make sure that we've got not only a robust regulatory framework, but a predictable regulatory framework. So all that, I will talk to it in terms of progress that has been made. At the moment, we're sitting at about 70% of that. At the end of this financial year, we might be sitting at 90. Key issues that have informed, among others, to make sure that we look at ourselves selfishly is the outcome of the INIR mission, the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review mission, that indicated that, among others, we need to develop regulations in line with the international atomic energy regulations. And we are spot on in our assessment that and the route that we are taking. From the strategy, that was a little bit of the highlights of what we are going to. The coming year is quite going to be a little hectic for us. One, to make sure that we need to process all the applications that come to us for authorizations, because that is key in our mandate. We have revived few issues with regard to that, and what becomes key in that is that we have included a public participation process in all processes that require issues with authorization. That becomes key because it was only in the nuclear power plants and in the NEXTAR-related facilities. We have also included public participation in the mining and mineral processing facilities, because in the past it was not there. And that has lengthened the response time from 9 to 180 days because of the inclusion of the public participation process in that space.
Response time?
The response time, it means when an application comes to the NR for processing, it used to take about 90 days. But when we look at, we have to make sure that the public participation process is entered in properly, we increase the response time to include another 90 days so that we can make sure that the public participation becomes not only effective but efficient to allow the public to make the inputs to the processes that we authorize. Second to that is that we have increased our compliance assurance inspections to 348 in total, which means 58 for the nuclear power plants here in Cape Town, for the NEXTAR facilities and radioactive waste repository to 118, and to the mining and mineral processing to 172. We have made them smarter, as I indicated, and divide them quarterly so that they can be measurable quarterly, so that at the end we can see how we're progressing toward achieving our set targets. We will do audits as required, especially in the nuclear power plants, so to make sure that going forward we understand the status of safety in our nuclear power plants. We have in the past doing a lot of audits in the mines. We have now shifted to make sure that there are going to be a lot of audits in the nuclear power plants and in NEXA. Of course, one thing that we've been doing to assure the public that indeed we are a regulator of note, we have not been hesitant to enforce compliance. Should we see any violation from the condition of authorization, we have been successful in ensuring that we enforce compliance. That resulted in, among others, close our facilities if we have to go that route. But that is the last option. But in all earnest, we've been successful in doing that if there was deviation from the condition and the regulations. We will have an emergency preparedness and response. This year it goes to NEXA. Last year it was with ESCOM. We're doing that, staggering them so that we cannot, however, load them. But every second year, we do an emergency exercise at Quebec or at ESCOM. One other thing that we will test is to test our upgraded emergency before the end of the year to test whether it can respond as it has been made for. But the key issues for our emergency control center is that we will be able to receive real-time data from the operations, sitting at where it is situated in Jura, but it's going to be interfaced properly with ESCOM, Emergency Response Center, with the Emergency Response Center of the City of Cape Town, with the Emergency Response Center of Madeleine, and with the Emergency Response Center of Nexus. So that while we're sitting there, should there be any steam generator rupture or any malfunctioning that might result in a release of radioactive gases to the environment, that will be detected by us. The direction of the plume will be linked to the weather services so that we can see the direction of the plume and make sure that we provide adequate measures should anything happen. So that is the major upgrade that's going to be done to our emergency. That's why I indicated that we have given about 12 million to do that. It's not only emergency, but also the related infrastructure. One of the issues that I mentioned was the IEA self-assessment that we have done. We have implemented the action plan as we proposed, and at the moment we're sitting at about 70% with the hope that at the end of this financial year, 80% to 90% of that plan will be completed. Of course, there are other interdependencies, but we managed to see them properly so that we move them. Once completed, the confidence that the completion of this house will give is that we will be able to have an optimal regulatory framework, predictable, robust, effective and efficient. So that's why we spend a lot of time in making sure that we upgrade, update, review legislations, our regulations, and update them appropriately. We have also looked at nuclear security. This year, for the first time, we'll be doing 29 nuclear security inspections, increase from 5 that we used to have to 29, because what we have done, we have capacitated ourselves as the regulator in the space first, make sure that we understand what needs to be done. We looked at the international world, what's happening, best practice, benchmarked, Now we are ready to move into that space to make sure that our facilities adhere to the best standards. Coupled with that, we have published the neutral security regulations for the first time, and they will be coming online in the next weeks. That will make sure that neutral security program that we have crafted for 29 inspections is done in line with that regulations. We will continue to do our normal review and assessment in all the areas, and we put targets, we put plans, and we make sure that we do those plans as required. Once our laboratory is finalized, we'll be able, at the end of the year, we'll be able to do about 60 to 80% of the verification. It means all the samples that we take in the environment, we will be sending them to our laboratory to analyze so that we can confidently say that we are protecting people against neutral damage, not only people, but also the environment. Because going forward, we need to make sure that the environment is adequately protected. Key issues is that we are going to, as I indicated, partnering with the young nuclear professionals. The women in nuclear, for example, is key also to us. We partner with the women in nuclear and the young nuclear professionals to make sure that we demystify nuclear, and we go on an awareness program to make sure that nuclear safety awareness is promoted in areas, especially in areas where these facilities are operating from. This has become a very high priority for us this year. That's why we seek the partnership of South African young professionals together with the women in nuclear so that they can assist in rolling out this awareness program. There are other important issues that I've indicated that relate to our international obligations. We are signatory to various conventions. One of them is the Convention for Nuclear Safety, the Convention for the Joint Convention on Spent Fuel and Radioactive Waste Management. But over and above that, we also participate in various IAEA Nuclear Safety Committee, the Commission Nuclear Safety Standard Committee, the Transport Safety Standard Committee, the Radioactive Waste Standard Committee, about five of them. What this committee does in the main, we participate in this in terms of making sure that we develop safety standard benchmark to international practice. Now, what is left is that when we come home to South Africa, we need to make sure that they are customized because we have to look at our legislative framework in totality and make sure that all these nuclear safety standards are also implemented. That's one. Second is that we need to provide operational feedback. We need to say they are implemented by all the facilities. These are the gaps identified. These are the operational experience that we have picked up. How can we improve them? So it's a continuous process of making sure that we're not only improving ourselves, but we contribute to the global nuclear safety and security regime. We have, as I indicated earlier, developed a funding model that will ensure that we continue to remain financially viable as an entity. The financial model that we propose that is sitting with the executive authority for perusal and consideration and possible approval is, among others, based on two aspects. One is the aspect that is practice that is adopted internationally, the cost recovery. It means all entities that we regulate, we need to recover the cost of regulating from them. We have looked at 68% cost recovery from all the operators and the balance of 32% coming from the state. This is an international practice. You can go in US, Canada. In some instance, the state is providing to about 80%. So ours, the state is providing 32% and the bulk coming from the operating organization along that 68-32% split. We are also going to implement a system of internal controls. Part of it have already borne fruits. We are talking this morning that we have, for the past 3 years, received unqualified audits. We're hoping this year, actually we're not hoping, we know that this year we will receive because of the controls that we have put in place, especially in regard to our financial controls. We have, as indicated earlier on, looked at our risk profile, and we spent a considerable amount of time looking at it. And among others, we also looked at the fraud that we have added to that, compiled a very comprehensive risk and fraud plan, and we hope that it's going to be implemented properly. We are going to make sure that by the end of the year, all the issues that have identified that the controls are in place, not only in place but implemented. And we have provided targets of how we are going to ensure that they are implemented, especially with regard to the fraud, 50% in quarter two, and by the end of quarter three, 80%. So that by the end of the year, 80% of all the plan has been implemented as required. We have looked at the governance structures internally, and there are some areas that need improvement. One of them was to look at how efficient are they, and we have defined measures that are going to make sure that every quarter we need to talk about 100% level of efficiency. We're not compromising there. That's why one of our values is excellence. So if we cannot excel in internal controls, especially governance structures, we might find ourselves in challenges. We have come with a very innovative business model, excellence model, that is going to make sure that it captures all the issues that we need to do, including the quality management system associated with that. Our sound infrastructure, we have developed and maintained it. Key issues among them is that we are focused on having an electronic document management system. It becomes key to us because as a regulator, from time to time, we have to provide records. We have to keep records, first of all. And secondly, we have to provide those records through various legislative provisions, like, for example, PAIA. And we need to make sure that we press the tab and these records are accessible, not only for those purposes, but also to make sure that we can keep records of what we've been doing all along. So we invested some considerable amount of money in making sure that we've got an eDNS system. It will be finalized somewhere in July, August this year. And once finalized, I think it will serve the purpose that is being developed for. We have looked at performance culture in the organization as one of our strategic initiatives. And key among them was to develop a business excellence model. Business excellence model that we developed has been, when we discussed it with our counterparts, there are those who said, where have you been? We have not been aware of the business excellence model that we are creating because it incorporates the element of quality management system, and not only that, but also the issue of performance management system through our organization. To the point that we're contracting twice, other people are contracting once, we contract twice to make sure that we really keep to the targets and we're keeping people to the performance areas that they've committed to. One of the important issues that I've indicated was to make sure that we pride ourselves to be an employer of choice. That can only be done if we've got a satisfied and productive employees, and to that we measure performance and the employee satisfaction twice and make sure that the issues arising from that are factored in as part of continuous improvement. This year we have set the bar at 80 to let us look at every time we assess the performance and satisfaction levels of employees, it must be above 80. If it's below 80, it means there is drastic issues that need to be done. We should have sleepless nights to make sure that that is achieved. That was the first part that deals with the overall strategic initiative that we are going to look at. But of course, we have costed the plan, we have costed our strategy, and we're moving now to the space where we're looking at the finances, how we are going to control our finances. I looked at the figures that are there, and they're quite small. I guess we can look into the financial notes as articulated in our strategic plan that was distributed. But the first portion of that, it deals with the processing of the applications. We can look at the revised estimates, 2012 and 2013. Total expenditure revised for this year will be, our total expense will be about 168 million, an increase from 148 of the previous year. The bulk of that will go to, of course, with the cost of employees and remaining to goods and services. If you look at the next page, that details exactly how that is then broken down. As I indicated, the highest cost goes to the cost of employees, and the remaining goes to the goods and services. Of course, there is no surplus predicted for this year. We're hoping that we're going to use our budget as spent, as we always do. The financial notes, I think, are the ones we, because of the challenges of the fund that was used there. There has been a noticeable increase in the authorization fees at an average of 4% over the past 4 years. This year it has increased to 102 million, from 102 million to 141 million. And that is the 68% that are indicated in a foundation model that should come from the authorization holders. And the balance, of course, is what the state normal contribution is 32% that I talked about earlier. There has been a noticeable decline in the government grant. Last year, the grant was boosted by the CAPEX that we received. We received 70 million, 12 million first. The 12 million was aimed at upgrading our emergency control and response center, which I think we did use, an additional 17 million to make sure that we refurbish our dilapidated Cape Town office so that it becomes habitable, and among others, not only ending there, so that it can be able to cater for the new transmission program. We managed to move our offices and headquarters from the old building that we were in to the new offices successfully, with some challenges, but finally, the rental cost, we managed to save because we have bought that property outright, and we have managed to still servicing the bond, but that servicing of the bond is better than the rental that we used to pay for the same building. First we moved to rent that building, and then finally we bought that building. But if you compare the rental versus servicing the bond, which finally will make sure that at the end of the 20-year period, we own that building, I think it's a noticeable saving.
Marana, we are running a little bit out of time, so if you try and wrap up.
I have indicated that, among others, we received 18 million. That was used to make sure that we have our independent verification in the laboratory that we're having well established. It will be completed at the end of the financial year. The cost of this will be 24 million, but we will request additional funding through the MTF. The funding model has indicated 68 and 82% split, and I think that was all from us in terms of the strategy and the budget that goes with it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Marana. The National Nuclear Regulator, over to you, honourable members. Mafeka Senesi, you have a new colleague, if you may know her, and welcome her warmly. Okay, we're waiting with great patience.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Susan Behrendt from COP.
COP is all over the country. We just got curious. Which part of the country you come from?
I'm from the Northern Cape.
Oh.
Upington in particular.
Okay. So you'll help monitor the solar park project for us. Thank you very much. You're welcome, Mama Susan. Okay, honorable members, over to you. Honorable Smalley, Honorable Freilink, Metindo. My focus in the Mamatibe.
Thank you, Jay. Let me start from the back with the finances and then with my way towards the front. First of all, if I look at the budget considerations, which was your third slide, just on a way of clarity maybe, I saw that your carrying value of assets jumped from the one financial year to this one now, from 23 million to 137 million. But your acquisitions of assets doesn't actually reflect that major jump. So I'm just trying to understand where does that actually come from, or why the big jump of that. Secondly, on the budget considerations as well, I do note that there is no provisions made, and there's a sales by market establishment. And when I try to understand that, is especially under your new funding model and trying to increase your funding options, then I don't understand why there isn't anything in there if money is a problem to your entity. There was a lot mentioned about skills leaving your the shortage of skills or highly qualified skilled personnel that leaves your organization. But I didn't find anything where there was an actual either strategic objective, actually the retainment of that, or the actual requirement of those actual skills to say that I'm going to try to call PhD scientist in X field or whatever your shortage is, because I couldn't determine on your organogram what your actual shortage is where. And when I do take that into consideration, and you are doing in some of your KPIs, you're doing various inspections on quarter one and two, and at the four different areas, and your nuclear security inspections that varies from, I don't understand the verification, because from 5 to 10 to 9 to 5 in each quarter, why can't you have an inspection equally like your target setting in your strategic objectives as two, where it more or less is equal. And I'm trying to understand how many inspectors actually have you got in order to do those inspections. Are those people on site, and do you is it possible to actually do those inspections? Jefferson, I'll come back. I'll allow my colleagues to go.
Okay, Honourable Freddy.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, and for your presentation. I have a couple of questions. The first one is just on the governance of the NNR. Now, in terms of the board of the NNR, there was a position, well, there still is, for civil society representation on the board, and I know that the previous representative, in fact, resigned due to various reasons. How has that position now been filled, and has civil society been able to have its own process in terms of nominating people to sit on the board? I'd just be interested to hear on that function. Then just in terms of the self-assessment report, which you mentioned, which was in compliance with the IAEA requirements, I'm just interested, I mean, when you mention the fact that you're part of your job is to, in fact, put confidence around the nuclear industry and particularly around the nuclear new build program. Now, it always kind of gets my radar up, because, I mean, we've seen this before in terms of how different departments have, in fact, run programs, such as the program that they ran with Free Thinkers, where they spent $4 million on a big nuclear propaganda mission, essentially. And if you want to do this differently, and if you want to, in fact, build confidence in the program, what you're going to need to do is more than just push our propaganda. In fact, what you're going to have to do is come clean with the public as well, and particularly the self-assessment report, which none of us have, in fact, been able to see yet. It hasn't been released. And what we need to know as the public and as the public representatives is precisely what has been identified in that report as the issues that we have to address before we embark on a major new build program. And I'll be interested, do you not see that as part of your role to, in fact, come out and say, these are the crucial areas that we need to address, and this is how we're going to address them? And is that the work of the NNR, and are you going to be doing that anytime soon? I'm just interested on that one. Now, the other point around the budget is that the previous CEO, in fact, said that, you know, the NNR can't have a Mickey Mouse budget if they're going to be overseeing the regulatory authorities of the nuclear new build program, or the proposed new build program. And what I've seen here is that you are saying that you're coming up with a new funding model where you want to raise most of your money through the operators. But essentially, I mean, the operators in South Africa will be state entities. I mean, it will be Eskom and it will be Nexa. And are they able to, in fact, provide those funds that you are talking about? And will that not lead to significant cost increases in terms of, say, the electricity price, in terms of funding that? I'm just interested to hear your views on that and what ESCOM's views have been around your new funding model. And precisely how much do you think the NNR needs to be funded going forward if you are going to play a proper regulator oversight role in terms of the planned expansion of nuclear? What do you think is the budget that you would need in terms of doing that? I'll leave it there, Chair.
Except the propaganda component, Honourable Fraley. I think if you're going to make such a judgmental issue, you'll have to share with the committee what you mean by propaganda, because as a committee, as a whole, we'll be the first to jump on anyone who meters out propaganda, particularly on such a strategic area as nuclear. So if you could really be helpful to share with us what areas, which components of the communication or outreach work that has been done by any of these agencies, which was propaganda, not just facts, but propaganda, that will be very helpful, and I'll be standing alongside you to ensure that that's not done anymore. But you free me, Rana, to can I arrive at the end? But not the propaganda side, no. Martin.
Thanks, Chair. Mine's on the safety and the protection. You know, last time the CEO mentioned that there were 17 mines that were more than limited dose exposure. And I know that some of the mines are derelict and ownerless, but what are your plans? There's Tudor Shaft as well. And what is happening to the people there in Tudor Shaft? And also the public participation forums, can you expand on them? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the promising and wonderful presentation, because we were feeling that NNR is going to disappear somewhere somehow, the way it was previously. I would like to thank. And I would like to thank the way NNR is prepared to work, especially with the young people, because as we see, our young person who is leading NNR, that's wonderful. I read a book of why Africa is poor, and they were talking about Russia, that it is aging, which means the people who are there are old people. They won't be able to participate, but I think as South Africans, we are really having a torch that is in front of us, and we will see to the end of the tunnel. The other one which I would like to ask is about the women in nuclear and also the participation of public participation. Do you have the Greenpeace people there? That's my question there. And what the other one is about your finances. Do you think the 12 million and the 24 million, is it going to see you through, or are you going to be stuck somewhere? Thank you.
Prof.
Thank you, Chief. And thanks for the presentation. What I see coming out of the presentation are quite a few grand plans. And again, we talk about the young people, young scientists, but what I didn't see or I wasn't fully explained is what mechanisms has the NNR put in place in terms of the skill losses. Do you have a retention policy in place, and how is that going to roll itself out? In terms of the finance, the same question as Honorable Smiley, about the assets, the value, and the acquisition, it doesn't quite line up. It doesn't quite line up. And then, of course, there's a constant question about the viability as a going concern. And I just can you just explain more to us how you're going to overcome this? Also, just if you can give us more detail on your funding, a more detailed plan on your funding plans. Honourable Helen spoke about, you know, it's mostly going to come from SOEs and how will this be funded? And also, what kind of dialogue will the NNR put in place to ensure that the broader industry understands regulations and the regulatory practices? And if you can also expand, as the other Honourable Member said, on the public participation processes. And then finally, given that the 12 million you spoke about, and you said it was to upgrade, amongst other things, the technology, again, and what and how, given the challenges that you're facing, what is the forecast of spend specifically for updating and introducing new technology? Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be following this document. Some of the red flags maybe are going to answer to the questions you are asking. And that time to check what's the latest on them. I start on page 10. On page 10 of that document, they are referring to post-discussion potential impacting on the NNR. And you end up there saying, should these be approved, it would mean a widening of the scope of NNR's activities and have significant implications for each capacitation. I think as a committee, we're interested in that, where we can assist, who is going to bring the approval. If you go to the early engagement on the same page, you end up saying the third paragraph. For this to be possible, the licensing of the new nuclear power station would have to commence in 2012 at the latest. And the preliminary licensing engagement should start as soon as possible. The question is this going to happen? What would it take for each two? I take you to the paragraph again just down there. It says, in the light of the IRP report, a pipeline of NNR technical staff should be established for a fully fledged new build project. Who is going to establish that? Is part of your program? Is it going to happen? As I say, I'm raising the same red flags. I take you to page 12. Page 12 under economic factors. I take you to the second bullet. Retention of key skills, that is, in the short term, NNR has lost two of its electrical engineers, amongst others. This will hamper the implementation of some of the key projects flagged for 2012. That sounded very serious to me, but people going and coming is a norm. Is it because those vacancies are not going to be filled? Why is this red flag so red? I take you to the bottom of that page on the legislative or legal factor. NNR has submitted the amendments with NNR Act to the Minister of Energy in the first quarter of the financial year 2011. And anticipates approval to be granted so as to enable organization to be more effective in diverting its mandate. I'm curious to know, where are we in that? Is there something that we need to do if you trace that back to 2011? Let me hold on there. I have more questions. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you very much. Over to me.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I'll handle the governance related issues from the board side and a few final ones. I think the first one that I need to just put into picture is that the term of the old NNR board ended on the 30th of November 2012. A new board came into place on the 1st of November, on the 1st of December 2012. In the new board, we've got representatives from Labour, civil society, the government, and the independent members. So the new board is a newly constituted board with all the members as they are required in terms of the NNR Act. So we don't have vacancies on the current board. And then on the second part, the issue to say the assets are increasing by about 100 million, yes, it's true. You will see when the financials are presented after the audit is completed in July 2013 that there's going to be a procurement of the new building, which is the Edna head office in Centurion. The bond went through and was registered in November 2012. So it's going to be only reflected in the financial statements for the year ending 31 March 2013. So those financials will get audited, so they only come to the committee once audit has been concluded. The other part which was alluded to was to say, is the budget of the NR sufficient? It is not sufficient, that's right. But I think we need to go back to say, the way we work out how those were regulated compensate for effort, that's based basically on the number of hours that we spend on regulated activities, also with the equipment that we use, and also in terms of what training do those people need. So basically we have to come up to a formula as to who pays for what. But the only catch now is that we cannot say we know what the regulator needs to have, because up until the whole build program plan is finalized, then we can actually be able to determine as to what is the scope of our regulation. What we know now is that what is the activity on all the license holders, and we're able to estimate as to how much we need to do the work that is required in terms of our regulated activities. And then on the 12 billion for the ECC, we wanted more money on that, because the start to say we need to have the control center at the NNR so that we are able to have the independence of us being able to having access, or basically being able to react to things as and when they happen. But I think we need to realize that this was the start of a program. So the 12 million will give us a foundation, but we'll keep on increasing the activity and increasing the capacity of the emergency control center. I think the other part was basically to say, is NNR a viable and a going concern? I must say I'm very comfortable that NNR is a going concern entity in terms of what we've put in terms of the new funding model, the 60-238 model, to say what the government must fund and what those who are license holders must fund. And I think the model basically gets us to a point where we're able to cover the bulk or most of the expenses we incur and to be able to recruit the skills that we need. Yes, we still have a good gap that we still need to work around the issue of building more capacity, because of the fact that we're living in a world where the organization, I think we can see that, is actually in a growth phase. So as we grow, we'll need more funds and we'll need to actually develop more skills. I think that's all from my side. I'll give now to the NCO to give more, to respond to other questions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, I think there are a few issues that we need to demystify, because if we don't, it doesn't leave with a proper picture going forward. The issue that is continuously being mooted about the lack of skills in the nuclear industry, which perhaps we don't subscribe to. People come in and go in, it's natural, we know that will happen. What we highlighted was the loss of two electrical engineers who were doing a very key project for us. That project was related to the migration of analog to digital. So they were looking at the digital instrumentation and controls as associated with the nuclear power plants for the future. Now, if you leave that project 25% in the middle, you leave, and it was part of what was supposed to be completed in the previous year, that was a concern for us. But we managed to go through it. We got technical support organizations, and they helped us to go through it. That's number one. Number two, the bigger picture, that we've got a talent management framework that looked at the whole chain of talent management, right from recruitment to retention and so on. So to attraction and retention. And that is implemented with a bias towards the youth and women, as they were previously disadvantaged. And the myth that there are no young people who can come to the nuclear industry, we have seen that, we demystify that. If you look at the current NNR employees, in terms of the age profile, we find that most of them the bulk of the LTIF is sitting between employees who are between 32 and 42. And therefore, it tells you that we've got enough competent, young, nuclear scientists and engineers, and, of course, drawing from the previously disadvantaged communities. But what became important is the partnership that we have with universities who are producing these scientists. That we do through an internship program, a very comprehensive internship program, so that while we have mentors, we know that there will be those who are aging and living, but we want to couple those mentors with the internships program that is going to assist these young nuclear professionals. That is in place, is part of our talent management framework. So we are highlighting those two engineers because they are leading a very critical technical issue, especially taking the cue of what happened in Finland. Remember the nuclear power plant in Finland, one of the key issues that delayed was the instrumentation control, the digital control. So we said, let us look what is happening internationally, let us prepare ourselves. It was a position paper to do the INC, a digital instrumentation control, but we managed to plug the gap by bringing in competent technical support organization, and that has been created. So in terms of skill shortage, rest assured we are on the right track to making sure that we're looking at the future, and the nuclear, young nuclear professionals and the women in nuclear are assisting us to make sure that they become relevant to the program that we are doing as the National Nuclear Regulator. We've got efficient inspectors. We don't have resident inspectors because they got they become familiar and competent in doing the job. We've got sufficient inspectors for the nuclear power plants, for the NEXA facilities, and for the mines. That's why we indicated we are going to do about 350 inspections in total for this year. That we do based on the resource that we are having. Should there be a need that during the year we need additional because of the specification of complexity that arise, we normally highlight that and make sure that we get this. But at the moment, the inspections that we have planned are based on the current capacity and resources that we are having, including financials. So we are not in any way lagging inspectors. But I think I highlighted the issue with regard to nuclear security. That is a new area. Internationally, nuclear security has started to become prominent. One is that we have done, we have for the first time developed nuclear security regulations. And that security regulation is going to determine how we're going to do our inspections going forward. This year we're creating a baseline. That's why you see the values fluctuating, because we're trying to create a baseline. In the past, we did about 5 nuclear security inspections in a year. When you look at international trends, looking at the statistics at our disposal, we found that people are doing more, including nuclear security exercises. But we don't want to catch the operators by surprise. We need to make sure that while we're doing that, they are aware of the regulations that we are going to do. Secondly, we discuss them, these regulations, so that implementation becomes non-negotiable. So it is in that understanding that the nuclear security inspections are going to fluctuate, because we want to create a benchmark, taking the cue from international best practice and what is happening internationally. There was a question that touches on the IAEA self-assessment. By its nature, it's a self-assessment. Self-assessment means all regulators worldwide convene at VN and say, but how can we make sure that we are effective and efficient as regulators, looking at ourselves selfishly, you know, introspection. So this is an introspection tool. The results are made known to the public. We are not hiding them, because we are saying this is where we are, this is where we want to go. And where we want to go is not a secret, it's where the whole world is going. So we looked at that through that eye. We came up with a national action plan. That action plan, to some extent, included the Department of Health. So we had two action plans. We had the national action plan, but we had an inward-looking action plan that was only looking at the national regulator. We developed regulations based on that. We developed position papers based on that. We developed guidance documents. These guidance documents are not a secret. They are uploaded in our website. So everything that we did based on the IAEA self-action plan is there in our website. Should you require more information based on that, I indicated earlier on that there are various ways of availing information to the public through BAHIA or through coming to our offices to make this information available. We've done that in the past. So it is not a secret. Information is there in the website, the position papers that we did. The regulations are going to be gazetted, so members of the public will have opportunity to, you know, to provide the inputs to that. At the moment, we've got about 8 regulations that have been done. Very comprehensive, detailed, benchmark, international, and best practice, and therefore, that avenue is still open, and generally there is nothing to hide in that aspect. There was another question that related to 17 mines that we normally use to classify as special case mines. We were classified as a special case mine because when you go and do our inspections, we see the potential of those mines exceeding the dose limit that we have set. They are not exceeding it, but we see the potential. It means we're looking at the dose now, let's say in April, a project to say if this person is going to receive this dose this month, in December, if nothing is done, this is how much it will be. And based on that projection, we classify them as special case mine. We have 17 of them. But what we do, we put stricter compliance assurance programs. One of them is engineering controls. It means one thing to that mine, make sure that your engineering controls are up to the spec. Should engineering controls fail, we do what we call administrative controls. It means we now say, move people from this highly concentrated area to lowly concentrated area, so that the projection graph changes. So there are a lot of issues that we are doing with related to that. But the main aim is to make sure that the people living or working in those areas are not exceeding the dose limit. So we do a projection and we monitor and manage based on the projections, not on the actuals. Of course, one other issue that was mentioned in line with that is the public safety information forums. We've got public safety information forum for Kubek Nuclear Power Station, for the NEXA facility, and for the Valputs. We realized that there are no such forums for the mining environment. And that is where the challenges of two shafts, where there are a lot of tailings dams, we encounter them. So what we did, and that's where I mentioned the Women in Nuclear Program and South African Young Nuclear Professionals, that we partnered with them. Because I became jealous when they came presented to us that they visited 60 areas only last year during the weekends. They're not doing this during the week because they are working at various operations. During weekends, this committed Women in Nuclear and South African Young Nuclear Professionals visit areas to go and make nuclear safety awareness. There is no bias on what they're saying. They talk about nuclear safety culture to the communities in terms of awareness, making the people aware about the complexities associated with nuclear so that they can demystify it. So when they said they visited 60 areas, I became a bit jealous and I said, let us partner so that when you go there, the NNR presence is also informed by the activities that you do there. And we have agreed on that. We have drafted the program that we are going to make sure that that happens. So we are going to start priority us in the area, in the mining area, because we don't have public safety information forums in that areas. But in the nuclear power stations, next installations, and the Valputs, there is a public safety information forum. The public safety information forum, if I expand a little bit, this is how it works. The people living in that area are given the opportunities to select their chairperson and deputy chairpersons because they know each other. They drive the agenda, but the agenda of that is to make sure that people living in those areas, they are aware of the dangers of radiation, the positives, not only the dangers and the positives. And they get real-time information about what is happening elsewhere related to the activities that are regulated in the area. So that we sit in those meetings, we send representatives every time those meetings so that we can clarify issues, direct interactions with those communities. Secondly, we have established a forum where we engage in NGOs 4 times a year. One meeting happens in Gauteng, one happens in Cape Town, the other meeting happens around Zindara, and the other meeting happens in the Valputs where the community. But we said this year we might need look at the community and ask them, do you need increased frequency? If you need this thing to happen frequently, we will oblige. But we've got 4 structured meetings with NGOs. That means this are your greens, those are your environmental activists. That meeting happens 4 times a week. We keep minutes, we circulate them. All issues that they want to raise are raised there. We respond in the context that we have to respond. Because remember, we are an implementing agency. Policy issues, we refer them to government, and we answer what we should be responsible for in terms of nuclear safety. I think I've touched on the issues that were raised. In case, Chair, I've missed one, I'll be happy to look at it and provide clarity.
I don't know whether you did. Sorry. Cost estimate for the nuclear build.
I think, Chair, I will go again in the cost estimate for that and say we are an implementing agency. I've indicated that we have been included in the NEC squared. I've explained what is it, led by the Deputy President. The policymakers will make policies. And those policies will come to us for implementation. We will implement them. One is that we are not promoting nuclear as a nuclear regulator. That must be very clear.
No, we are saying don't come with nuclear technology and implement it for the production of nuclear energy. We are just saying, should you want to build a nuclear power plant, here are the rules. Please make sure that you comply with these rules. And these rules are benchmarked to international standards. Should you not want, the rules still remain. So we'll take the cue from government, especially with regard to the nuclear expansion program. If the government is saying this is where we're going, we will follow that route. But at the moment, we've got facilities. We've got NEXA, we've got nuclear power plants, we've got the uranium mine that we have to regulate. And we've got rules on how to regulate them. The future is mainly dependent by the policymakers, and we take the cue from them. I don't know that, Mr.
Members, before we take extra questions, I just want to check if all the questions have been answered. Metin, or your area, for example, I find.
Yes, Chair, I didn't hear anything about the choice of shaft. How far are they with the people? Because there was a resistance for people to move from the area.
Nazilendi Kumulayona, if you just touch that.
Let me mention the issue of the Tudor shaft in this way and put context to it. There is a settlement that was created next to Mukhale, and these people are sitting next to an old area, mine area called Tudor shaft. One, there is a dam. Actually, the children living in that area are paying close to the dam. Now, the first issue was to remove them to an area where it is safer, where they can stay there. All plans were made. We contacted one of the mines, Mukhale Gold. The dam does not belong to Mukhale Gold. It is an ownerless dam. We said, can you remove this dam and put it through your processes, and we can look at remediating this area in the meantime, and we create a playing ground for the kids with all the necessary amenities for that. While we were busy with the project, we were interdicted by the NGOs. We've been saying to the NNR, remove this dump. Now, we were so confused. We've been all along in the meeting, people saying remove. We look at all the risks. We went there, took our measurement, and said, this is a risk indeed, and thanks for bringing this to our attention. But we are removing it. We engage the mines, which were authorized. We were interdicted. There is still a court order that is there. We don't know what to do, because there is a court order interdicting us of doing what we need to do. We left that with the municipality to clear it, because that land, among others, the owner, first of the people who were interdicted was the municipality, because we agreed with the municipality. Can we remove this to this area because it is safer there? We did our assessment. So that is the challenge that we have faced in terms of what I would say, unrealistic demands from the NGOs. That they say do this, when you do that, they go, you know, I don't understand. I don't know what terminology can I use for that.
Let's
very same thing that they said we must do. So that is the status of the
I think it needs some follow-up, members. I'm looking at time as well, what Bungane would be, and at least give you a shot. Just two questions, Bungane, so that NNR answers before we go for tea break.
Indeed, Chair. Thank you very much. I had two questions. Nothing else. One question is the issue of filling of the vacant post of the CEO, as you are still acting. Who's the next young person is going to fill up that post? Probably the deputy chair must be enlightened. I got so excited when the young people are making there. So my constituent is represented. last question, Chair, is related to the issue of the communication technology system. I want to get a clarity, because you're saying you're going to implement it, you want to put it there, and you also purchase it about 200,000. And I just want to get the correct figures in terms of the amount that you budget for this, because what I got from the deputy chair was that you're going to put a system, but you're still going to upgrade it or move forward to ensure that it is this full component, that we must be able to know what is the whole total amount of that communication technology, and probably going to implement it for how long, because I think we must be able to follow up whether this system getting implemented. I'm trying to avoid an instance whereby you come in with a certain figure this year, next year you come with another figure, and the following year you come with another figure, then you come big with these big figures, where the other general will query such kind of escalation of money. Thank you.
I think that what upfront I think I should mention that this project of upgrading our emergency control and response center started way back in 2010. We provided a business case that in that year it cost about $6 million. But I think it was a very discussion that we didn't do it then, because I think the Fukushima that came accident, there were other things that couldn't affect us then. Now, when we revised the plan, it finally increased to $12 million, and fortunately, the Department of Energy provided us with a capex of $12 million to refurbish it. But I mentioned that there are key issues that we looked at. One, we need to get real-time data from the weather service, also from the nuclear power plants, should anything happen. Secondly, we looked at best practice. We went look at IEA, we look at the Koreans, we look at the French, and we look at the US NRC and say, these are the people having multiple facilities. We often have one. Should we need to increase that going forward, we must build our model such that it might be able to increase should we have a new expansion program. At the moment it will be adequate, but should we go increase and put two more nuclear power plants, we will need, of course, to increase some of the key issues related to that. But that model that we have done now will be able to assist us to plug in rather than to start remodeling from the beginning.
I think let me just quickly appraise the members on the issue of the appointment of the CEO.
In a few seconds, I'll run out of time.
Yeah, no, it's a quick one. The board has done its work, and we've made a submission to the minister. And I guess in due course, once that process is unfolded, then we'll know who the new CEO is going to be.
Thank you very much, Chair Inanna. Thanks a lot. Members, can I please, I didn't even ask questions, I had about five, I think. Can we put our outstanding questions in writing and submit them to NNR through the committee secretary? That I will do myself. But also, can I appeal, we agree that, because this is a bank presentation of a plan, let's be creative enough and look for another space to invite NNR. First time NNR actually overused its allocated time. It's usually seen as a regulator. That's just what I want and be done with. But I think awareness within the members themselves and issues that are coming up are more than what you budgeted for. For now, we've done what we can, but let's still go with it. Because amongst other things, one of the members, I'm rather concerned about the Judas Shaft issue. Remember, even when I started joining you full-time, it was one of the first things that came up and came out in the papers. All of a sudden, when we had initiated it, all of a sudden came out in the papers in a very, very distorted way. And now you are bringing us this complex and complicated situation. I would love that also as public representatives who play our role, which I don't know now, because it needs its own time, space, even if to the extent of engaging with the very people who are doing this. Of course, we need to respect, subject care as well. But still, one would like to go deep into the things. That what is the basis of, interdicting now? Because also, I see us as Parliament as a platform to engage some of the things. So the moment an issue is referred to the judiciary, it means people feel that they've tested all avenues, and I don't remember us as one of the avenues having been approached, to address that. Then, Charles, looking at you, I see people would be very keen to ensure the safety of the communities there, like any other community in any case, but specifically within our competency, the radioactive waste, dangers. So, if you could give me some space just for to look at how we can factor that in, may not be this term, maybe the next term, let's keep that in mind, bring back, NNR, and we go through the outstanding issues, not necessarily the outstanding questions, as I say, once again, please,
get your administration support to put together those questions via the secretary to NNR so that they can respond to them. Thanks very much for now. Thanks very much, NNR. Can you take a 10-minute break on the members so that we come back for next up? Thanks very much.